tonight on Exposé. Better late than never. Western broadcast media appears to have realized the seriousness of a possible full-scale war with Iran as a result of Iran's calculated and precise instinctive retaliation to Zionist Israeli onslaught on its consulate in Damascus. With Iran's counterattack, Zionist Israel's long-standing claim of invincibility has crumbled as digital media highlights its incapacity to stop the Iranian strike or appropriately respond to it. And 71% of Zionist colonial settlers think Zionist Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu should resign either immediately or right after the genocidal war on Gaza. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Iran launched more than 300 drones and missiles towards Zionist Israel on April 14 in its first full-scale military assault against the entity. As expected, U.S. military forces in the region helped the Israeli occupation intercept the strikes, yet they were still not fully successful in deterring Iranian retaliatory missiles and drones. Let us hear from Fuad Itaim, our broadcast expert, more about it in Fake News Exposé. In recent days, West Asia has been shaken by Iran's bold military retaliatory strike against Zionist Israel, marking a significant turning point in the region's geopolitical landscape. It seems that Iran's non-haste and precise instinctive retaliation to the uncalculated Zionist Israeli aggression on its consulate in Damascus has put the entire pro-genocide world on its feet, fully recognizing the gravity of a potential full-scale war with Iran. Fuad has so much to tell us about this past week's fake news exposé. Floor is yours, Fuad.
Thank you, Marwa. Thank you for having me. So as we all know, the Iranian operation against Israel, dubbed the True Promise, was a response to the Zionist aggression on Iran's consulate in Damascus on the 1st of April and the martyrdom of Iranian military commanders and advisors. Mm-hmm. This operation has far-reaching implications that extend beyond mere military confrontation. But regarding the mainstream coverage of it, let's start with The Wall Street Journal's YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Honestly, their explanation of why this attack happened seems like it's coming from a parallel universe. So let's listen.
Okay. It's how the conflict between the two countries escalated. Tensions in the Middle East had been building on several fronts. In addition to Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza, there have been cross-border skirmishes between Israel and the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah, and attacks by Yemen's Houthi militia against Western interests in the Red Sea. Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthi rebels are all backed by Iran. On April 1st, an Iranian diplomatic building in Damascus was hit in what Iran says was an Israeli airstrike. The strike killed top Iranian military officials, including a senior member of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps elite Quds Force. It was one of the highest-profile killings of Iranian military leaders in years.
First of all, saying what Iran says is an Israeli strike on the consulate is beyond mind-boggling, because the whole world knows that this was an Israeli strike. It's literally undisputable. Mm-hmm. Of course, barely any mention of the genocide in Gaza, which is what sparked the involvement of Iran and the resistance axis in the first place. Mm-hmm. WSJ tries to present the idea that Iran's proxies, like Ansarullah in Yemen and Hezbollah in Lebanon, and their skirmishes with Israel are what led to this escalation. Mm-hmm. WSJ then tries to say that Iran threatened retaliation immediately, even though Israel hadn't confirmed the strike, as if it needs a confirmation. And the Israelis also spent 2 weeks after the strike saying that the building was a military site near the consulate and not mm-hmm. the consulate itself, mm-hmm. which was untrue, but basically shows you how they spent all this time trying to justify the attack. Mm-hmm. So you don't need any more confirmation than that, really.
Yeah.
Next, we have NBC News, mm-hmm. Who used its correspondent in Jerusalem, Richard Engel, to amplify the Zionist attempt to downplay the importance of this attack and its significance. So they claimed that Israel and its allies shot down all the Iranian drones and missiles immediately, which is untrue. Yes, there were projectiles that were intercepted, but the air defenses were in a complete frenzy. This was Iran's goal, using inexpensive projectiles to penetrate the layers of their defense systems. And they knew this would happen, and all the main missiles hit their targets as they were supposed to, exactly as they were supposed to, including the intelligence and military sites that were directly linked to Israel's attack on the consulate in Damascus. Anyway, here is what NBC's Engel said.
So the Israeli Air Force has already deployed. Its goal is to shoot down drones before they enter Israeli airspace. But Israel is not working alone. The Israeli media report that British and American aircraft have already begun shooting down some of the drones over Iraq and Syria.
So contrary to the Zionist narrative, the strike actually holds an immense military and strategic value. And it showcases Iran's capabilities and its resolve to defend its own interests and its allies in the region.
Yeah.
And its sovereignty, of course, because a consulate of a country is considered the sovereign territory of that country.
Because we're very much used to hearing Israel has a right to defend itself, but it's never other people
exactly.
when they are retaliating to the Israeli entity's aggression.
Exactly. Also, we have to remember that this was a limited operation, and Iran came out and said as much after the strike. This was a fraction of their capabilities, and it was a powerful message, because if it shows you, if this was limited, imagine what a wider scale attack would look like.
I am imagining and liking.
This was already unprecedented, so imagine how much more unprecedented it would be. Next, we have Al Jazeera English, which unfortunately reinforces the Zionist narrative by downplaying the massive operation against Israel and its sensitive military sites.
I'm not even surprised.
It's very unsurprising, honestly, unfortunately. We're going to see how this is false in the upcoming digital mainstream media section with Julia, but for now, let's see what Al Jazeera said.
Okay.
Israel's military spokesman said the nation's defense systems detected incoming drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles launched from Iran and its proxies.
Together with our allies and partners across the region, we are operating at this very moment to defend Israel from Iran's attack. So far, we have intercepted the vast majority of incoming missiles by Israeli systems.
Many other mainstream Western media outlets also said after the Iranian operation that the world is now waiting for an Israeli response. Of course, completely ignoring the warnings of Iranian officials and the immense achievement that Iran has made by establishing this new equation and launching this historical operation from Iranian territory directly against the occupied lands.
Sure.
So with a move like this, Iran is capable of reshaping the global balance of power. And if Israel responds, it'll see something it has never seen before, something even more groundbreaking than this last operation. And this isn't me speaking. These are the words of the IRGC and the Iranian armed forces, and they should be taken seriously.
I couldn't agree more. Thank you very much, Fuad, for
your
analysis in the broadcast section. Now, ladies and gents, we move on to the digital mainstream media. Iran's strike is being viewed by all anti-genocide state and non-state actors, serving as a powerful assertion of its unwavering support for the Palestinian cause. By directly targeting the Israeli occupation with a projectile of advanced ballistic missiles, Iran has reaffirmed its commitment to standing alongside the Palestinian people in their struggle for justice and liberation. However, how did the Western and Zionist and even some Arab media platforms expose themselves by denying all of the above? Here is Julia Qasim, our digital media expert, with more.
Thanks, Marwa. Well, it's safe to say that the Zionist entity's decades-long boast and claims of invincibility has just been shattered in the matters of a night. So the Zionist regime's inability to prevent or adequately respond to the strike has exposed its vulnerabilities, leading to a decline in its perceived strength and credibility on the global stage. So in their reporting style, many print media outlets probably unintentionally told the story of the Iranian True Promise operation in a way that the ramifications of this historic event will continue to reverberate across the geopolitical landscape, shaping the dynamics of the region for years to come. So like the Washington Post, for example, which published on April 14th a piece entitled, Why Did Iran Attack Israel? What to Know About the Strikes in the U.S. Response, by Neha Masih and Jennifer Hassan. So in this piece, the Washington Post reported that it was an unprecedented four-pronged attack against Israel. Quote, Tehran's attack on Saturday was four-pronged, originating from sites in Iran, Lebanon, Iraq, and Yemen. The commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, called Tehran's attack more successful than we had expected and warned that any retaliation by Israel would draw a more forceful response. Mm-hmm. Then the Washington Post, in an attempt to show full coordination between the U.S. and Israel, posed the question, how is the U.S. involved? But rather ended up exposing the fact that the U.S. is not really looking for war with Iran, as per Lloyd Austin, the U.S. Secretary of Defense, who mm-hmm. said, we do not seek conflict with Iran, but we will not hesitate to act to protect our forces and support the defense of Israel. So meanwhile, Biden was quoted as saying, no U.S. troops or facilities were targeted in the barrage. We will remain vigilant to all threats, and we will not hesitate to take all necessary action to protect our people. So the Washington Post also published an op-ed piece by Max Boot entitled, Now It's Up to Israel, De-escalate or Retaliate Against Iran, which frankly, in my opinion, ended up being just in favor of branding the Islamic Republic as fully committed to standing up alongside the Palestinian people in their struggle for justice and liberation. So this is evident in the exact paragraph where he says, quote, even nations that have been calling on Israel to implement a ceasefire and lessen civilian suffering rallied to its side on Saturday. House Republicans now say that they will rush a floor vote on long-delayed military aid to Israel. So, Marwa, this only proves that all of the Western countries are in reality pro-genocide and only voice concern when it messes with their respective public opinion, mm-hmm. you know, back home.
And they say it's long-delayed when Israel literally received military aid in the middle of Ramadan to continue its genocide, which is totally also exposing their hypocrisy.
Exactly, because they'll say, like, they don't support the invasion of Rafah, but then they'll just fast-track more weapons to them at the same time.
Exactly.
And then, you know, this also further exposes Iran as being the only state in the region officially ready to engage in battle on the side of Palestine.
Definitely.
So, moving on to the BBC, which published a piece by Tom Spender entitled, What Was in Wave of Iranian Attacks and How Were They Thwarted? Mm-hmm. Where Spender discussed how at least 9 countries were involved in this brief yet unprecedented head-to-head operation between Iran and Israel, with the projectiles fired from Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Yemen, mm-hmm. As well as Lebanon, too, and allegedly downed by Israel, the U.S., the U.K., and France, as well as Jordan.
Wow.
So in the BBC piece, Spender shows us how a few of the ballistic missiles got through and struck Israeli territory, as reported by the BBC correspondent covering the event at the time, by showcasing a map of the Nevatim Air Force Base in the Negev Desert in southern Israel, which was hit by Iranian missiles. Mm-hmm. So Spender then presents an infographic that portrays the range of the Iranian ballistic missiles, which ended up pushing the narrative that Iran holds immense military and strategic value, showcasing Iran's capabilities and tenacity to defend its interests and allies in the region, which easily covers the entire map of occupied Palestine.
And even goes beyond it.
Yes, and this doesn't even include their more advanced weaponry, which they're saving for later.
Like the hypersonic and others that we might not even know exist.
Right. Those are the ones that they're really scared of, Marwa. But Iran didn't even break those out. It was able to accomplish 1,100 kilometers plus of range with just, you know, older stockpiles.
Yeah. Well, we can't wait to see the newer stockpile. Thank you very much for being with us, Julia Qasim, our digital media expert, to explain what happened after the retaliatory attack on Zionist Israel. Now, ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned because we will next move on to social media expose. Iran's retaliatory true promise attack on Zionist Israel drew applause from many Palestinians, whether in Gaza or in the entire historic Palestinian map, on Sunday as rare payback for the Israeli entity genocide on their enclave. Meanwhile, certain social media users from certain Arab countries, which acted as the first layer of defense for Zionist Israel, promoted the, foolish notion that Tehran had staged the assault more for a show than to inflict real damage. Here is Sima Itayim, our social media expert, with more.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Marwa. So it wasn't just Palestinians on social media who were ecstatic about the Iranian retaliation, but axis of resistance supporters all over the world, because for them, this was not just a legitimate response to the consulate attack. It was a clear demonstration of Iran's commitment to defending the oppressed mm-hmm. and challenging imperialist aggression. Mm-hmm. And this garnered support and admiration from social media users and other like-minded entities. So mm-hmm. beginning with the most widespread sentence on all social media platforms that we saw following Operation True Promise was, Iran has the right to defend itself, a sentence that's often used and famous for being used by Israel's allies in reference to Israel. Mm-hmm. And this is usually the sentence we all know when it comes to, you know. So we've witnessed this sentence being posted hundreds of times by, you know, hundreds of accounts and recorded and retweeted hundreds of thousands of times. So let's see a couple of examples mm-hmm. of that. What the media hides posted, Iran has the right to defend itself from Israel. Do you agree? Mm-hmm. Rev Laskaris posting, Iran has the right to self-defense. Mm-hmm. Aya Hijazi posting, Iran has the right to defend itself. Gaza has the right to free itself from occupation. Palestine has the right to free itself from colonization. Israel has no right to occupy Gaza and no right to colonize Palestine. Mm-hmm. Then we have posts by Palestinians themselves in Gaza, as mentioned earlier, who are overjoyed to finally see missiles falling on the entity that has been committing incremental genocide mm-hmm. against them for the past 6 months, almost 7 months, as the world watches in real time. Mm-hmm. We have Aboud, the famous Aboud, the lovely...
I just love him.
...young Aboud, the Palestinian reporter who speaks to us from Gaza with his usual sense of humor and sarcasm and lightheartedness. He posted many videos of the missiles landing in occupied Palestine, and he said, "We thank Iran for this joy, which we have not heard since October 7." Mm-hmm. We go to Ahmad Hassan from Yemen, who decided to address those who rushed to, of course, downplay and belittle the event, mock it, and call it a theatrical performance. Ahmad posted, "The Arabs had 7 months to perform a play like Iran's, but they left the role of the hero in the play to Iran and insisted on playing the role of the scoundrel. Frankly, I liked the play and I liked the hero. Everyone's performance was fantastic. You are wonderful in your villainy and meanness, and Iran is wonderful in its heroism." Hmm? Then we have May from Lebanon, who shared a video show received from Gaza from a young man who was ecstatic to hear absolute silence for the first time in the skies of Gaza after six, almost 7 months of constant buzzing mm-hmm. of drones. May wrote, "After 190 nights, this is the first night that the skies in the Gaza Strip are calm. Children are spending a peaceful night without Israeli rocket explosions. Thank you, Iran."
Indeed.
And we finish off with the one and only Lucas Gage, mm-hmm. who is a former United States Marine Corps veteran, and he's famous for his animosity and rants about the genocidal Israeli entity. So Lucas posted during the Iranian retaliatory attack saying, "Iran's retaliation will have zero or very minimal civilian casualties as they're trying to avoid harming non-combatants like any honorable military would. Israel, however, has shown itself to be the world's most satanic military for what it did to the innocents in Gaza."
Amen to that. And I think that despite the fact that we tried to portray what social media was saying, I think just being alive at that moment and witnessing how social media was reacting in real time to this unprecedented retaliatory attack against Zionist Israel was really a once-in-a-lifetime experience for many of us. And I think we have a lot of more shows to talk basically about this issue. But I want to thank you very much, Seema, for showcasing for us the support that the Islamic Republic of Iran was garnering online. Now, ladies and gents, stay tuned because next we have Figures Exposé. Opinion polls in Zionist Israel conducted last week have shown that nearly three quarters of the Zionist public want Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to resign against the backdrop of the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip, with half the country also preferring earlier elections for the Knesset. The Khan Public Broadcaster published surveys to coincide with the 6 months milestone since the genocidal war started on October 7. The polls showed the current government being ousted if elections were held immediately. Khan reported that 42% of respondents said Netanyahu should resign immediately and 29% that he should step down after the war concludes, making a total of 71% seeking his ouster. Of the rest, 21% said Netanyahu does not need to resign and 8% said they don't know. In addition, 44% said there should be elections within a few months, 22% want elections sometime over the coming year, and 26% said there should only be elections when they are next due in October 2026. Another 8% said they don't know.
Mind you, these numbers were before the True Promise operation by Iran. I'm interested in seeing how fast Zionists are now ready to go to early elections after the utter failure of Netanyahu in last week's unprecedented Iranian slap in the Zionist face. Now let us move on to the most notable expose voices for this week. It was unforgettable. We never went to bed that night. The entire world was up waiting to witness history being made as footage began circulating from the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank and the occupied Al-Quds, showing many residents, including inside displacement tents, whistling and chanting Allahu Akbar, God is the greatest, in joy as the skies were lit up by Iranian missiles and Israeli entity interceptions. Here is Nuha's voice from devotedly.yours telling it exactly as it is.
Yesterday, Iran defended itself by sending drones into Israel after Israel attacked an Iranian embassy in Syria. Now, it's very clear that Iran was just sending a warning to Israel, as most of these drones were intercepted, and they knew that was going to happen. The ones that were not intercepted hit military bases that were already evacuated. Regardless, it had Israeli settlers screaming while running for shelter. The fear that they felt in less than 24 hours doesn't even amount to 1% of the fear that Palestinians have dealt with in the last 6 months. Every single day, Palestinians are constantly under attack. Even though many Israeli soldiers were pulled out of Gaza because they knew Iran was going to attack, it did not stop them from continuing to bomb Gaza. What I would like to point out is, within the last 6 months, many Israelis have not only protested asking for their government to go harder on Gaza, they have also blocked humanitarian aid, saying that they deserve to starve. They have said that babies deserve to die because they would grow up to be terrorists. They have had convention attacks. At least in their situation, they had somewhere to run to for safety. At least in their situation, they don't have to worry about Iranian tanks in their streets. They don't have to worry about soldiers breaking into their homes, stripping the women, gagging the men, blindfolding them, taking them for weeks on end to torture them. They don't have to worry about starving to death. They don't have to worry about soldiers taking the women and doing you know what to them while making husbands watch and telling the husbands, if they look away, the husband and the wife will be shot to death. And they most certainly don't have to worry about being sniped while trying to return.
Ladies and gents, with that, we conclude our expose for tonight. Stay tuned for more eye-opening investigations on Expose. The truth is just a revelation away.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, religion and life. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, you are listening to A to Z and we want to talk about religion and life. Well, let's understand the concept of religion in Quranic sense and how it relates to life and how it is important to our lives. Well, first of all, what is religion? Quran puts forward two types of concepts about religion and they are very much related to one another. In first sense, Quran says, religion, fitratullah allati fatara an-nas alayha. It's your own innate nature which Allah has created within you. It's actually your own understanding of what's true and what's false. It's your own natural capacity to know what's right and what's wrong. So this is one aspect of religion. So religion is about your own inner nature, which tells you what's true and false and what's right and wrong, and pushes you from within to do what's good and to accept what's true. And on the other side, religion is the guidance which come to us from the Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, from Quran, from the revelation. Quran tells us that these two are together, religion. So they two help each other. Revelation comes to nurture our nature. Religion comes to nurture our nature to do what's good, so we may do what's good, so we may pave the path of rightness and righteousness. This is the one aspect of religion. So in Quranic sense, religion is not about some rituals. Religion is not about some practices, just some practices, but it is something very deeply related to our own nature. Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z, and we are talking about religion and its relation with the life. Well, I may start it with an example. If you tell your child to not to play with a knife, this order from your side is very much in harmony with the nature of a child, because he does not know how to deal with a child. So his nature, his very nature needs that such an order should exist, such a law should exist for him, that he should not be let to play with a knife. Here, the order, the law is not imposed on him. Actually, the law here is arises from his own nature. Don't play with a knife is a law, is an order. But actually, this law and order comes from and rises from his own nature. Same thing goes for humans. We humans, what is a religion? It's actually the things we should act accordingly as a result of the type of the nature we have. Our nature has some spiritual aspect, it has intellectual aspects, it has some aspects which are beyond our reasoning and understanding. So taking them all in notice, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala guides us in life. So this guidance from Allah actually derives and rises from our own nature. So in this understanding, actually religion is that type of law which is not imposed by a higher divine being upon us, but it is actually nurturing of human nature by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, a compassionate being who created us, a compassionate being who loves us, helps us to gain our own perfection by guiding us towards something which is good for us, so we may live happily here in the hereafter. So religion is actually about living according to your own true nature. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help us understand the true religion and act according to it. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
In the United States, President Joe Biden has condemned what he called anti-Semitic protests at many elite universities in the United States. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. National broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden on Monday, 22nd of April, weighed in on the pro-Palestine demonstrations taking place at elite university campuses in the United States. "I condemn the anti-Semitic protests," Mr. Biden told reporters after an Earth Day event in Northern Virginia on Monday, 22nd of April. "That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians." A reporter cut off the president's sentence before he could finish. More than 100 people have been arrested at Columbia University since pro-Palestine protesters began occupying the grounds last week, and police arrested 45 protesters at Yale University on Monday, 22nd of April, after the demonstrators repeatedly refused to vacate the plaza voluntarily. Protesters outside of New York University's Stern School of Business were also arrested on Monday night. Students at Yale and Columbia universities are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and demanding their universities divest from companies connected to the Israeli regime. But some Jewish students at Columbia University say many of the chants are anti-Semitic, and they're concerned about their own safety. Similar protests have been taking place at other college campuses in the U.S., including at MIT, Boston University, Emerson College, and Tufts University. Other top Democrats, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, both of New York, have also criticized the demonstrations. Calls are growing for Columbia University's president, Nemat Minu Shafik, to resign as Columbia goes fully remote in an effort to de-escalate the situation. The entire Republican Congressional New York delegation called for Shafik's resignation on Monday, 22nd of April, accusing her of failing to keep students safe. "The ongoing situation that has unfolded is a direct symptom of your continued lax enforcement of policy and clear double standards," the lawmakers wrote. "Your failure to enforce the rules on campus has created an environment in which students and outside agitators know that they're able to operate with impunity and without any accountability. While the rot is systematic, the responsibility rests squarely on your shoulders." Republican Representative Mike Lawler of New York, who was just outside of Columbia University on Monday, said, "Everybody has a right to protest. They have the right to voice their opinion. The moment that you turn that into physical assaults or threats against others is the moment that you lose that right." Nemat Minu Shafik testified before Congress for several hours last week, telling Congress, "Anti-Semitism has no place on our campus, and I'm personally committed to doing everything I can to confront it directly." Some Jewish congressional Democrats also went to Columbia's campus to offer their support for Jewish students. They did not echo the calls for Shafik's resignation, but demanded the restoration of order within the university. Addressing his remarks to the university's administrators, Democratic Representative Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey said, "Stop the double talk and start acting now. Discipline harassers, restore civility on this campus, encourage peaceful, constructive dialogue." President Biden declined on Monday, 22nd of April, to weigh on Shafik's fate. At the same Earth Day event with President Biden, Progressive Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York cited the peaceful student-led protests at Columbia University and other campuses, highlighting how politically sensitive the politics are with respect to the Israeli-Hamas conflict. President Biden also condemned anti-Semitism at protests at university campuses in a written statement on Sunday night. Silence is complicity, he said, even in recent days, when we've seen harassment and calls for violence against Jews. This blatant anti-Semitism is reprehensible and dangerous, and it has absolutely no place on college campuses or anywhere else in our country. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime has continued its near-daily raids on Rafah, a city in southern Gaza Strip, resulting in the deaths of many Palestinian civilians, including many children. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Biden on Monday, 22nd of April, said he condemns anti-Semitic protests amid escalating pro-Palestine demonstrations at Columbia University and on other U.S. college campuses. President Biden said, "I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians." President Biden was cut off by a journalist before he could complete his sentence. He was then asked if the Columbia University president should resign and replied, "I don't know that." Just before taking questions from reporters, Biden was talking with Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat of New York, who has been an outspoken voice during the Israel-Hamas war and last month claimed Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. President Biden and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez were together in Virginia for a climate change event to mark Earth Day. The president's comments come as hundreds of students at Columbia University are occupying the center of university campus in protest. Students are being arrested and school president, Minouche Shafiq, faces calls for her to resign. The protesters, who include Jewish students, are calling for a ceasefire in the Gaza Strip, and for the Biden administration to halt all military aid to Israel. Demonstrations have spread to other campuses in the United States, including New York University, Yale University, and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. The Biden administration denounced the protests on Sunday, calling them blatantly anti-Semitic and saying they were encouraging calls for violence. While every American has the right to peaceful protests, calls for violence and physical intimidation targeting Jewish students in the Jewish community are blatantly anti-Semitic, unconscionable, and dangerous. They have absolutely no place on any college campus or anywhere in the United States, the White House issued a statement.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Chavidar, guest speaker. Salam alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Well, we talked about, you know, some of the jurisprudential laws related to mosque and performing prayers in the mosque with Sheikh Javed in the previous episodes. And we'd like to continue our discussion along the same line. And here in this program, I'd like to start with this question, Sheikh. You know, well, you talked about some of the most important mosques in the world of Islam.
Yes.
Which are regarded highly sacred, all right?
Yes.
Such as Masjid al-Haram and Masjid al-Nabi. Well, you know, if you are a traveler, and it is mostly so because... from all the corners of the world, Muslims, in fact, would like to travel and visit Mecca. So they have to go to Saudi Arabia, and whether they are muhram or not, they'd like to offer their prayings there, right?
Yes.
In Mecca. Should they actually offer their prayers in full or partially? Would you talk about this?
Yeah, this is a very good question, and also a frequently asked question, you know. When it comes to Masjid al-Haram and Masjid al-Nabi and even the whole city of Mecca and Medina, a traveler is free to offer his four rakat prayers in shortened form or in full form, you know. Mm. They are free to offer their prayers in full or in parts. You know, for example, in shortened form, or tamam in taqsir, we have the Arabic word, which probably the audience can understand better. And of course, this is the ruling regarding prayer offered in Mecca and Medina. Now, it's not only inside the mosque in Mecca or in Medina that you can choose to offer your prayers either in shortened form or in complete form. Mm-hmm. But in the entire city of Mecca in Medina, you have the option to go either with full prayer or with shortened prayer.
Is there any recommendation, like, as to, for example, the full prayer rather than the shortened one?
Well, there's no special recommendation, because when you offer, probably, that's my assumption. Mm-hmm. When you offer, for example, four rakat prayers, you have more sawab for each rakah of the prayer. And if you offer the shortened prayer, you offer two rakats of prayer, and probably you will gain
more sawab or reward.
Yeah. So there's a matter of sawab and
I see. But what about Masjid Kufa and Karbala?
Yeah. Kufa is a place where you have Masjid Kufa, and that's where the commander of faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam was martyred. Of course, in Masjid Kufa, you have also the same option. You can choose to offer your prayer in shortened form or in full form, okay? Mm-hmm. Tamam or Qasr.
Right.
And when it comes to Karbala, of course, the doubt, you know, many people doubt as to whether they are allowed to offer their prayers in full or not. Because as a traveler, you have the right to offer your prayers in shortened form wherever you are, as long as you are a traveler.
Mm-hmm.
But in the holy city of Karbala, of course, you are allowed to offer your prayer in full form when you are close to the chamber, to the zarih of Imam Hussain alayhi salatu wasalam. Like, for example, the very place where the tomb is located.
Mm.
Now, you can offer a few meters you can offer your prayers in full, just a few meters, like 20, 13, or 14, 25 meters, according to one, it depends on the scope of that very hall, you know, the hall in which that very room in which the chamber happens to be.
Right.
Now, you can offer your prayer in full in that very place. But, of course, as a traveler, you cannot get a chance to offer your prayer in full in that very place, because it's always crowded.
Mm-hmm.
For people who go to Karbala during Arba'in season, they can never get a chance to offer their prayers in close proximity to that place.
I see. Chamber. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. With me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to offering prayers in the mosque and the importance of mosque, basically. Well, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javed, well, we all know that there needs to be actually mosques in every city or in every region, especially where there are Muslims. And to do so, they need to sometimes change a building into a mosque, right?
Yes.
So what is the process? What are the procedures, basically, of converting a building into a mosque? Should there be a need, actually, for a scholar, a religious scholar, to come and inaugurate, for example, this building, like they used to do, like the officials actually do it?
Yes.
When they want to open up, for example, a shop, they have scissors and ribbons, and they have to, you know, cut that ribbon. So these formalities or the special formula that needs to be pronounced.
Well, according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khomeini, if you are converting a building into a mosque, you have to recite the formula of, for example, of endowment, waqf, for a piece of, for example, for that building, in order to, in order for it to be changed into a mosque. For example, you can just say that I endow it, for example, that place as masjid for the sake of Allah.
I see.
And this is the formula, okay? If you say I endow,
simple as that.
Yeah, simple as that. And that becomes a mosque. So when you recite that formula, that's enough, and that place.
And any individual can pronounce it?
Yeah, the owner of that place, not any individual, okay? When you are an owner of that property or land, you can make that, recite that formula, and then you see that place will be treated and ruled as a masjid. Now, if there's, for example, an ownerless place, like a desert, you want to build a mosque there. His Eminence is of the view that if you you built a structure, a building, with the very intention that it is going to be a mosque, previously there was no, there is no structure, no building there, and you just and it was an ownerless place, okay?
Right.
So, if you build, you see, when you build a structure with the very intention that it's going to be a mosque, in this case, it's not necessary to recite the formula because you had the very intention from the very beginning that it's going to be a mosque. That's enough. It will be an if for example a person recites prayer in that place as a mosque, that's enough, and it will be a mosque. There is no need for the recitation of any formula.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh. Of course, there are lots of questions which are related to this, but we have to actually postpone it to after the break. Stay with us, and we're going to come back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
اللهم صل على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javed, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei about offering prayers in the mosque and the rules about the mosque. Well, Sheikh Javed, I asked you a question regarding the formula that you said that needs to be pronounced or recited in order to convert a building or a place into a mosque. But with the modern world and all the technicalities, the legalities, you know, the legal issues to be taken into account.
Yes.
Because you said as soon as the owner of the building or the place says or recites the special formula, that building is called a mosque. I mean, like, it should be treated as a mosque.
Yes, of course.
But don't you think that with these modern legal technologies, they need to, like, put it down in paper and officialize it and, you know, let everybody know, legally speaking, that this is a mosque, so that the heirs, for example, or the other people or the neighbors would know officially that this is a mosque?
That's good to do, but it's not necessary, you know.
Uh-huh.
As you rightly mentioned, probably if there's no a proper deed, or you see, well, you know, I mean, the waqfnama or that very...
The ownership needs to be transferred, right?
Yeah, the certificate is not issued.
Or and the
it's
title.
Not the title, of course, is not issued from an official source.
Right.
Accepting or acknowledging that it has been considered or transferred and changed into, let's say, a mosque, then probably some people might at the end of the day come and claim its ownership.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's important in this time around to for example, go to a notary office and get it registered.
Yes, exactly.
Otherwise, there is such a probability that the heirs might come and claim it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And appropriate, in fact, the place and,
yeah,
and
course,
or claim, for example, or that would be very bad, in fact.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. We like to continue our program, but unfortunately, this is that all the time we have for this episode of Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to delve into some of the jurisprudential laws regarding praying in the mosque and the rules about the mosque based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.